Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the January 30th legacy meeting to order, and we have a quorum, so I don't know if anybody's had an opportunity to take a peek at the minutes. If so, I don't know if Representative Zhang has had a chance to peruse.
Yeah, move.
Representative Zhang has moved the minutes. Any questions to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes are approved. Thank you, Representative Zhang, doing your earnest hard work coming into meeting here. Welcome, everybody. It's a brisk day in Minnesota, and we get to talk about some exciting projects today. And we're going to start off with the Children's Museum, and if they could come forward, and we'll get going. Apparently, they brought some fun stuff for us to they're going to test our skills with science, so we'll see how we do. I think some of the Republicans were a little afraid this morning, so we'll trust that Representative Erdahl can carry the weight of his entire caucus. Please introduce yourself and go ahead when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Diane Kreisen, president of Minnesota Children's Museum, and my colleague here today, I'll let her introduce herself.
I'm Deb Alquist, and I'm a museum experience coordinator at the museum.
Thank you. Go ahead. Good morning.
So, good morning. Legacy Funding has supported Minnesota Children's Museum in creating a breadth of new opportunities for arts access and arts education at two museums and at locations throughout Minnesota that we're going to do a look back on the 10 years of how we've used that funding. But first, I have a short video for you to be able to hear directly from one family to describe in their own words the impact of the learning environments and the access to those learning environments at the Children's Museum. So we'll just start with that first. Oops, I'm used to doing, is it a Mac? Oh, there you go. See, I have a Mac at home. I don't know how to run these things.
Okay, here we go.
What book is that, Hiroki? You want to read it fast? Okay.
Each year, more than 3,000 families receive memberships through Minnesota Children's Museum's All Play program.
Do you want more, or are you all then? You want more book? Okay, here we go. Our son Hiroki is 7 years old now, and when he was one, he was diagnosed with Phelan-McDermid syndrome. With his autism, because he's so active, the outings became a must for us. We visited the Children's Museum 3 to 4 times a week, probably for the first 2 years of his life.
It's amazing how just a simple place to go for a child like that, where it's easy, and it's not stressful. And not just that, but he enjoys it. It's fun.
And the people there are wonderful.
That's right. Everyone
in
there is so supportive.
The space is made with children of all needs in mind.
It's been significant for our family.
This program helps families who cannot otherwise afford the museum be able to do so.
The All Play membership was something that we think was really a godsend for us. When you think about families in need, you may not think of our face.
Mm-hmm.
But Hiroki's diagnosis brought an immense amount of financial stress and burden in ways that we had not anticipated. I think part of our journey being parents to a special needs child is learning to humble ourselves and learning to ask for help. We find the Children's Museum to be a therapy home. It's a thoughtful community and a loving community. Mm-hmm. And we just love being a part of that through the All Play program.
Funds raised will directly support this program and make this opportunity available to more families.
It never was boring for us or for him. The tot room, that's the first place that he learned to crawl, and it was a huge celebration, and it was such a beautiful moment where he's coming up and I'm like crying and I'm just clapping like you're making it up. But that was such a huge thing for us.
Well, it's just all therapy. I mean, every part of it for him has been therapy.
The Children's Museum, this is a wonderful place to be.
We know excitement about the new museum will expand interest in the All Play memberships.
The new Children's Museum is very exciting, the potential for us, because we've been able to unlock so much in him with the old museum. We're really excited to get back to the museum and see what else we open up in Hiroki's world through the new museum.
We don't know what his limits are. We're just going to keep using every resource that we have in every creative way that we can to
open his world.
Yeah.
But yeah, their words, opening his world, like, that's the power of a children's museum experience. You know, so not only is it a delightful arts and cultural experience for families to go to, but the creation of the experiences in a children's museum are grounded in the research of how kids learn through hands-on, open-ended play. It literally wires their brains for development, whether they have special needs or wherever they're at on their learning journey. So, you know, I wanted to share that the American Academy of Pediatrics recently wrote in a report that came out just a couple months ago that the importance of playful learning for children cannot be overemphasized. So looking back on the past 10 years, legacy funding has powered the creation of new playful learning experiences and the ability of families to access those experiences. Simply put, without legacy funding, these projects I'll walk through would not have happened. For those who haven't been to the Children's Museum in, let's see, I know, again, he told me how to make this full screen. Is it full screen for them? Okay. Oh, fabulous. For those of you who haven't been to the Children's Museum, there was reference to the new museum in the video. If you haven't been there in the past year and a half, our flagship location in downtown St. Paul was expanded and completely renovated and reopened in the summer of 2017. And I have to really acknowledge that, thanks in large part to the capital investment from the state, this vision came to life. And if the committee has the opportunity to go on a tour of sites, we would really welcome you coming to our location, because a lot of our experiences are full-body immersive experiences that we couldn't bring with us to the committee hearing today. But we did bring along one portable experience for you to get hands-on and get your kind of critical thinking juices flowing on this chilly morning. I'm just going to let Deb just briefly introduce it, and then she's going to come around and just it for you to get hands-on.
President Krizan, thank you very much. I know you just recently had the St. Paul party for all the legislators at your facility, and unfortunately I had another commitment, but I think many of the people here had the opportunity to go there, and I hear it's wonderful, and so we're all very excited about that, and I think there's quite a bit of consensus amongst our committee to get over and great. And you offered that in my office the other day to have us take a peek, and we're very much interested. But go ahead, Ms. Almquist.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So one of the spaces in the museum that really receives the legacy funding is the studio. And in the studio, we consider it to be a maker space. So that means making guesses, making attempts, making tries at things, all in a creative, immersive art environment. So one of the things that we brought along today is squishy circuits, which we have found to be a really great activity to do with kids. Play-Doh, any old kind of Play-Doh, is generally found to be conductive of a material. And so so this is a way to combine a very familiar material like Play-Doh and circuitry and some basic circuitry components. We generally in our studio do not teach what to do, but we experience it alongside our visitors. And so we introduce it, and then we tinker alongside and learn what we learn from each other. So I'm going to pass out some and let you tinker along and learn what you learn from this circuitry and the Play-Doh. Does that sound okay? And then I think Diane's going to continue talking.
Yeah. Thank you, Ms. Alquist. Go ahead, President Kreisel. present.
Yeah, so as you tinker with the squishy circuits, as Deb introduced with you, a couple other things that I'll just highlight that Deb and her team are just experts on with tinkering alongside with kids is we use a process to guide children's learning without taking over and telling them what to do, because the learning happens in the process of discovery. And so Deb and her team follows a process that has the acronym of MAP. The M in that stands for, one of the things our staff does is we first make observations. You know, so if someone is stuck in what to do and how to explore the materials, one of those observations you might make is, I see the battery pack has two different colored cords. I know one is negative and one is positive. You know, just a little nudge there to kind of think about what's in front of you. The A of MAP is ask open-ended questions. And so, again, as opposed to telling somebody what to do, it's like, well, what have you tried? So I offer that as something for you as you're tinkering with that. And then lastly, depending on how far along you get in your discovery process, perhaps if you get something to light up, you know, you might then hear a question of, I see you have one bulb lit. I wonder if two things could happen at once. So there you go. As you explore that, I am going to go on because I want to share other experiences. So this is one of the experiences, as Deb said, that we have done in our studio for you to look at. Another experience I wanted to highlight, again, with a bit of a technology component to it, is something called Ozobots. So I don't know if... somebody had success. Wow, last to get the materials, first to get the beep. Fantastic. So this is a little robot I'm holding up, a color-coded robot called an Ozobot. So another activity we have for experimentation in there is this idea of programming this robot to do different things. So in this exercise, children are made available to different colored markers, and they can draw a path to get their robot to do different things. And they're just given this kind of color-coded sheet that has some different instructions that it's coded. Like if you do a certain color in a different way, you can get it to jump, or you can get it to zigzag, or, I don't know, some high advanced one is a tornado move and things like that. And so, you know, kids, I just brought some samples. You can help me hold these up. Of just some different ways of, you know, people approach these, and there is no right answer. There is no wrong answer. I mean, that's the whole point of doing this. So it's open-ended exploration. So this is just some of the examples of the different experimentations that have happened in our space with that experience. Another experience we brought in was something called DigiPlaySpace. This was created by artists from across the world, and it packed a whole bunch of like really exciting activities for kids to touch, control, and play. Not only did the exhibit combine fun and learning with robotics, electronics, stop-motion animation, music, and gaming for our visitors, but it was also a real learning experience for our staff, and it's inspired future visions of how to incorporate technology into our experiences, as a couple of the examples I just highlighted here. In a different way, in March, we're going to be opening up a new experience in our Imaginopolis gallery that brings the outer space to that gallery. We work with researchers at the university's Institute of Child Development, and they describe this gallery as, quote, brilliant in the way that it provides a space for children to use their own imagination and to invent their own stories. You know, we recently just had a mom who sent us a note about this gallery that said, and I quote, Imaginopolis made my husband and I realize we need to spark our son's imagination better at home. It was all amazing and a huge learning experience for our son and us as parents. So thanks to legacy funding, we can change out the theme and the props in our Imagine-a-Bliss gallery to keep imagination soaring. So in this new edition coming in March, materials will be themed around cosmic debris. So some visitors might imagine themselves building a spaceship and flying through outer space. Others might visit an alien planet, maybe invent their own language on that planet. And we're going to have a feature where there's a captain's log where you can audio record your story and beam it back down to mission control on Earth. And the last example in our St. Paul Museum that I wanted to highlight is a special programming that we create that sort of knits together all the different experiences in our galleries and kind of elevates the learning to a new level. So this summer, we're creating a program called Curious About Inventing that highlights local youth who are entrepreneurs. So, for example, Green Garden Bakery is an award-winning youth-run business selling vegetable-based desserts. Or 9-year-old Aniki Allen, he's created a fashionable line of bow ties that inspired by ice cream and Legos. So we want to bring youth like this into the museum on a Saturday where they can interact with their families, introduce their innovations to our families, describe how they provide creative thinking into what they do, and inspire future generations of inventors. So moving on to other projects that we've done with Legacy funding. Legacy provided the seed funding for starting a satellite museum in Rochester. Since 2012, when it opened, more than 200,000 visitors in the southeast region of the state have experienced playful learning in this new location. Legacy also supports an access program for families who otherwise couldn't afford to come to the museum. More than 11,000 visits have been made possible thanks to that program. Access partnerships that we do to promote that program include Families First of Rochester, which works with Head Start and school readiness programs for families to receive vouchers for a free membership to the museum. And we also host two family nights for those families that are dedicated nights for families in those programs to gain exposure to the museum and become familiar with it. Another partnership is with Riverside Community Elementary School, which has 80% of students participate in the free and reduced lunch program. We go to their parent nights to hand out the to qualified families the vouchers for the memberships, and we also engage their students in programming. Recently, an art show was displayed at the museum by art created by these students. Legacy also supports the ability to freshen the learning experiences in our Rochester Museum. Currently, our exhibit there is Young Architects. It uses a variety of building materials to learn in a hands-on way. The exhibit features famous architects and their iconic structures to provide inspirations to kids and their families to create their own unique masterpieces. A previous experience included Framed, Step into Art, where visitors literally stepped into famous paintings such as John Singer Sargent's Camp at Lake O'Hara and Diego Rivera's Corn Festival, as well as the opportunity to create their own Mona Lisas. And community partnerships also enhance the experience. This past holiday season, six cross-cultural holiday celebrations delighted visitors with art, storytelling, dancing, eating, and many other activities. Another initiative is a Storyland exhibit that toured around Minnesota. So it created three beloved picture books. It was The Tale of Peter Rabbit, Snowy Day, and Where's Spot? And again, you literally stepped into these picture books for pretend play adventures, at the same time providing adults with practical tips in both English and Spanish on ways to cultivate literacy through everyday activities. This exhibit traveled to 14 communities throughout the state, from as far north as Thief River Falls and as far south as Worthington, and many other locations in between. And it stayed for 3.5 months in each of those communities that it toured to. More than 80,000 visitors in greater Minnesota were able to access playful learning in a location closer to their home thanks to this exhibit. We also created smart play spots, which are literacy-based exhibits that were permanently installed in 13 libraries or community centers around the state. And again, that went from, you know, Grand Rapids to Owatonna. Each community was able to custom design the exhibit to fit their local community. So, for example, Brainerd has a bait shop, there's a bait shop in the library. and then as well as a mural that has Rice Lake. Oh, look at all those lights over there. That has Rice Lake, and the iconic water tower is featured in that mural. Or in White Earth, they have a wigwam and a canoe in their exhibit. Or in Wilmer, there's a barn and a special reading nook that's dedicated in memory to a career librarian. To date, libraries estimate that more than 450,000 visitors have accessed those playful learning experiences. While the main museum was under construction, another project that Legacy Funding made possible was a pop-up museum at the Mall of America. So this was open from October 2015 through April of 2017. 160,000 visitors experienced playful learning that included a dinosaurs exhibit and physics experiments with ramps and balls and a variety of other experiences as well, too. And lastly, I wanted to highlight a project around parent engagement. It's an initiative to champion the play, to champion play and to empower parents to really support their child's playful learning. Given how important play is to a child's development, and I think it's kind of fun for grown-ups too, but sadly, play is declining in childhood. Children today play 8 hours less every single week than back in the 1980s, and that's having a profound impact on their development. So, you know, we as parents need to understand how important play is to a child's development and to have more open-ended, child-directed, playful opportunities happening more often in our community. So we've created engaging content that promotes what we call kid-powered play and distributes this content through a variety of channels, using our a parent resource hub on our website, using social media, using text messaging, using on-site messaging in our museums. And so to provide tips and inspiration for families to get the most out of play, some of the tips that I could have used when my kids were younger were the idea of embracing repetition. When you hear the words again, again, it's actually a good thing. It means when children repeat what they do, they are really joyfully mastering their world and building that confidence when they do something over and over again. Or really showing that the importance of focusing on the process and not the outcome, which is what you've been doing here today, because the journey is really, and the learning is really in the journey of what you're doing, not necessarily in the outcome of what you're achieving. It really helps children to learn to think critically, act independently, and to solve problems. So just a few words to look ahead to this year's appropriation. I believe there was a handout on this year's appropriation request in addition to the summary of how we've used the funds in the past. We are requesting $1.5 million. $1 million will support the creation of new experiences for arts education and access at our museums in St. Paul and Rochester. Earlier I described a program this summer called Curious About Inventing that showcases youth entrepreneurs. With funding in 2020, we have initial concepts to take the intersection of art and storytelling to a new level. Picture writing haiku and decorating it on a banner and having it hanging in our atrium space, or experimenting with clay and stop animation. Plus opportunities for new imaginative experiences in our Imaginopolis and super awesome adventure galleries. In Rochester, new changing exhibits will provide hands-on learning with community partnerships to enhance the experiences, and more scholarship memberships to ensure access for all families. With an increase of $300,000, we would engage a geographically diverse set of communities across the state and champion playful learning in their communities. We would collaborate with communities to shape the engagement that works best in their community. We envision hosting community events with parents, educators, pediatricians, and local leaders to highlight the benefits of play in early childhood development, building awareness and resources for lasting support of playful learning. And with an increase of $200,000, we would build a permanent STEM exhibit in the Rochester Museum that centers around developing creative and critical thinking skills that are the early building blocks necessary for higher order STEM skills. Thank you for the trust that you've put in Minnesota Children's Museum. And just wanted to wrap up by saying legacy funding has really made a profound difference in education access for hundreds of thousands of kids and families.
Thank you, President Kreisen. We have a couple questions, but we do have, I think we, I mean, we're all a little bit competitive here, and I think we might have a winner of, I don't know that it'll have to come to a vote, because I think it's kind of clear who won over there, but maybe Representative Heitzman can take a few seconds to describe what he has going on over there, but I think it's very, pretty impressive.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I heard there was a polar vortex. And I'm doing everything I can to push it right back. They can have it.
If only we had a solar panel, we could generate our own power here, too. So.
Mr. Chairman, all I've got is gumbity. It won't do anything.
Representative Green, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and President. I do, you know, you talk about the advantages and some, I don't know if you'd call them studies, but the advances that you've seen and that you know how kids getting the ability to play and helps them advance forward. But have you done anything in the way of, you know, there's such a disconnect today with kids and their parents, whether it's one parent or two parents, and I have my own views on that as well. But, you know, when some of your colleagues were in my office, one of I mentioned this same thing, that you know, we have a tendency to even to move bills in here where we're trying harder and harder to get kids into a school-like environment with the universal pre-K. But it seems to me, as someone who's had six children and now has 14 grandchildren, and Mr. and Representative Heisman might be able to speak to this too, but the interaction with the parents is more crucial than anything. Forgive me, even than more crucial your museum. So what are you doing, or are you doing anything to promote that that family to come in together and maybe take some of that stuff back home and try to stress the importance of hours of that mother and father spending with that child for their own development?
President Kreisen.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Green. That's exactly why in the parent engagement initiatives that we wanted to move forward as well, too, because there's so much that researchers know about how important hands-on learning is to a child's development, and that is around play. And we also have, we just have social brains that develop in interaction with other, and there's no question that parents are the first and most important teachers in a child's life. And there's a lot of things that, you know, research knows about a child's development that we as parents would benefit from understanding that and understanding that there's things that we naturally and intuitively do, like playing with peekaboo and games like that you play at a very young age that is so powerful to like I say, literally wiring a child's brain as they learn to develop. And so I think it's really important that through a parent engagement initiative, that's how we're trying to get the word out through this idea of wanting to do a statewide campaign to really get the word out about the importance of play, because this is This needs to happen more than just in a visit to a children's museum experience. And if we kept the research to ourselves and just curated experiences but didn't, you know, share with others that this needs to be happening beyond those walls and in our homes and in our communities, I don't feel that we're doing our mission justice with that.
Representative Green, very good question. Representative Erdahl, and we all were very impressed with your Gumby as well.
We couldn't do anything.
Just
sat there.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And a question for you. When you were talking about the decline in playtime with children, now does that include video games? Are video games part of playtime?
Ms. Greisen.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, great question. The decline in play that we're talking about is when kids are hands-on and directing their own play. And so screens are one of the things that are detracting from kids using their whole bodies and their whole imagination and being hands-on in exploring their world. So that is one of the factors that's driving the decline in play. There's also, I think we get a lot of misinformation. We as parents get misinformation that we need to get our kids into adult structured activities at younger and younger and younger ages and in adult directed activities if it's not done in a pedagogically appropriate for the age way where it is overly adult structured and adult directed. Again, that isn't allowing kids to develop cognitively, socially, emotionally, and physically themselves through their own exploration.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for that answer. And just a comment on the importance of play to children. And I frequently make references to the Finnish education system. And in the elementary years in Finland, 15 minutes of every hour is set aside for individual or group, I guess, play.
Good comment. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you provide the committee at a later time in the 10-year period that you're referring to these successful goals that you've attained and the playful learning that's taken place, how your contributions from the private sector have improved, and tell us, give us a sum of money for the private contributions that have gone up, as well as the contributions that the legacy money has made.
President Greisen.
Yeah, thank you. I don't have those numbers off the top of my head, Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, but would be very happy to follow back up with the committee with that.
Thank you very much. Thank you for coming. You've been, I love hearing the story, and the play is, I think, even good for adults, appears, looking around the table. So it's,
Mr. Chair,
Representative Murphy.
Representative Zhang has created a very successful repair of a bridge in his district that he's trying to lobby for further money for, but we've repaired it.
Yeah.
It's very clever use of this.
And it was successful. The little purple lights went on and everything, and so I'm sorry about Gumby, but this is obviously second place.
Okay, I think we'll... I don't know if other representatives want to be competitive as well, but I had a hard time up here competing. I feel like I was left out a little. But no,
that's
hard to cheer. Thank you very much for coming today, and I had an opportunity. Go ahead. Thank you. Wilderness Inquirer, if you could come up and get ready. Thank you very much for coming down today, and we're going to try to get over for a tour to see your place, your new place. The other day, Representative Murphy, I just happened to meet her in the hall as you're coming forward. I'm going to say a couple words, but she gave me some former chair advice. She says, well, you never, never, ever, ever, never have animals at the beginning of the meeting, and maybe that's the case with fun and games, too, I think. We got a little behind the agenda already, but it was worth it. Welcome to the Wilderness Inquiry, folks, and I don't know how you want to proceed, but looks like we're setting up. Are you ready to go?
I think we're pretty much ready.
Okay, so go ahead and state your name for the record, and go ahead when you're ready.
Julie Edmiston from Wilderness Inquiry.
My name is Greg Lays from Wilderness Inquiry.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I'm Christine Tomlinson from Wilderness Inquiry.
Great. Chair Lilly and members of the Legacy Committee, thank you very much for having us here today to share a little bit about our Legacy project. We're here to share about Minnesota's outdoor heritage, and nothing highlights that more than a negative 40 wind chill day. So happy to have everybody here. As mentioned, I'm Julie. I'm here from Wilderness Inquiry, a nonprofit based in Minnesota that connects people of all ages, backgrounds, and abilities to each other and the natural world through shared outdoor adventures. We've been fortunate to receive funding from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund since fiscal year 2016 and have used it to bring history and culture alive for more than 14,000 Minnesota youth from across the state. We do this through place-based education in the outdoors, facilitating hands-on activities for youth that typically wouldn't have that type of opportunity. These experiences range from paddling on Minnesota's waterways, snowshoeing, fire building, mapping, and other historical lessons. And through these activities, students learn about the history of people and places. Most communities in Minnesota have developed around waterways. Our rivers tend to be our bloodlines. And when we connect youth to these special places, like the rivers in our hometowns, we are connecting youth to history, culture, and Minnesota's heritage. With support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, thousands of underserved students have paddled on a local waterway and lived that history. We were going to be joined by a few students today to share their experience. However, with the cold, we're switching it up a little bit. So we thought it would be fun to get people moving, warmed up, and experience the excitement of preparing for a canoe paddle, in which you might experience as if you were engaging in the fur trade or discovering a new settlement or fishing or hunting for your family. Each canoe experience that we facilitate with youth and families across the state has a safety and paddling session as youth prepare to embark in the canoes that you might see pictured here. And although we cannot paddle today in winter, we thought it would be fun to do a little intro. So I would like to introduce my colleague Christine, who is going to get us started. Would we have maybe two or three volunteers?
You can stay seated, and I will ask you to join me in just a minute.
And we promise there's no water involved today. We're not putting anybody on a frozen lake or river, so it's low stakes.
Think about it, and I'll ask for two people to join me up, and just after I introduce myself. So like Julie said, I'm Christine. I have led trips and directed trips around the state for 2 years now, and it's honestly one of my favorite things to be out in the field and to see students grow and develop in usually as little as under an hour, from being as scared and fearful to just, you know, stepping on the dock to then in that short paddle coming back to that same dock and literally paddling backwards because, one, they've realized how, you know, the movement of the paddling canoe works, and they want to paddle backwards because they don't want to get out of the canoe again. So it's a really powerful experience to be out there doing that. So I would like to now show you how we prepare these students to be safe on the water. Safety is our, you know, number one concern. So if I can get two people to join me here, that would be wonderful.
Not everybody at once.
I think Representative Green wants to.
He's closest.
How about I hate to do this to the freshmen, but maybe Representative Bo and Representative Zhang. I think Representative Zhang's ready to go.
Excellent. Thank you.
All right.
Voluntold.
Representative Zhang has a major river in his district.
Oh, I do?
Right. Here, I'll join you.
Great.
Oh, they got people.
This is my district on the beautiful district.
Yeah. All right, so you want to put this on.
Oh, they got two people over.
I would like everyone to picture that they are standing by a local water site. It's a warm day. They feel the breeze. And we are just now putting on our PFDs, what we call them, personal flotation devices. And you can just put that on and zip it up like a jacket. And I'll demonstrate what we will do with each boat group, each student that comes to class. All right. So if you all want to stay there, that's fine, or you can come out in the middle. Here's our paddles here, and I will demonstrate now. All right, thank you so much. So we are next to our waterway here, and we're going to learn about this device here. This is going to help us get down the waterway. We have this up here. It looks like a letter that we all know. Well, this will be our T grip today. I want you to give your T grip a high five. That T grip. Perfect. And you can just hook your thumb right under there, and you should be able to hold it like that, and then grab your fingers on top of it. Perfect. Should be a nice, comfortable grip. Then give everybody a thumbs up here. Perfect. You can grab the shaft, which is the next piece. Grab that way, and then your thumb should be pointing up to your other hand. Perfect. So now we have a comfortable grip, and the last part of our paddle is the blade here. And we are ready to go. So I'll have you guys spread out just a little bit. And we're going to learn our one of three paddles that we teach our students, called the forward stroke. So we're going to be taking our paddle, reach far in front of you, pull that water back, and then we're going to pizza forward. And that's not a technical term, but it's what we call feathering. And what we have our students chant with us is we paddle, paddle, paddle. Pizza, pizza, pizza. And I'd like you to picture pulling a nice hot pizza right out of the oven, so we'll keep that paddle nice and flat.
Can everybody join us for that?
Yeah, so we'll paddle, paddle, paddle. Pizza, pizza, pizza. Let's do one more. Paddle, paddle, paddle. Pizza, pizza, pizza.
I can't hear you.
Great. Awesome, thank you. So keep that paddle in your mind. We're going to now go over our three safety rules. So we want to keep ourselves nice and safe in the boat. So the first rule is now involving these things that we just put on. What are they called? Our PFDs. Beautiful. So we're always going to keep these zipped and clipped. So there's a
zipped
and clip under there. It looks like you both got it. That's great. So keep them zipped and clipped while we're in the boat. And that'll make sure we're nice and safe and ready to go. Our second rule is when we're getting into the boat. We want to keep our bodies nice and low and move slow. So what we'll all do together is we'll do low and slow is the way to go. All right, one more time. Low and slow is the way to go. Beautiful. So this will make sure, we're not running down to the water and slip and fall. We're not chasing the boat. We're keeping 3 points of contact and sitting right down nice and tight. Perfect. And then last rule, my favorite, is we're always going to listen to the boat captain. Today that is me, my bright yellow cap, and I'm going to be sitting in the back of the boat, helping steer us down the waterway, making sure we're all nice and safe. I'll be able to see everybody, so if anybody has any questions, they can look back and ask me, and we'll be ready to go. Sound good?
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. Great. Thank you so much, everybody.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And Christine in the back of the boat captain is also our history teacher and kind of delivering our
Thank you, Representative Bo.
Yes. Freshman initiation, I'm done now.
Well, we do have a member that snuck out that actually has a full-size canoe in his office. Representative Heitzman has a beautiful canoe on the ceiling.
Okay.
Go ahead, sir. Chair Lilly and members of the committee, my name is Greg Lace again, and thank you again for having us here. I was thinking on the way over here as far as Minnesota's outdoor legacy, echoing Julie, today's a great day for it. But if we think that this is a cold day, I just want to let you all know, tomorrow we're sending a group of people up to the Boundary Waters canoe area to jump through the ice hole on Bearskin Lake, which we call the Minnesota Baptism. So we're in our element here. You know, I've been to a lot of these committee hearings over the years. I've been doing this now for 40 years, which is hard for me to believe. And this is Wilderness Inquiry's 40th anniversary. I've never quite seen one quite like this. So thank you for that, for a first time. And Representative Bo, I appreciate your willingness to participate here. I hope you can actually get out in a canoe one of these days. Have any of you been in any of those big Voyageur canoes down the river? A number of you have. So you know the energy and the passion, really, that these people have. And I would just tell you that, you know, to me, what I see happening out there is a conversion of kids who, as Christine alluded to, they start off frightened. In fact, many of them start off terrified. What we see is a lot of kids who don't know how to swim and who are afraid of the water. And while that's not the big thrust of what this project is about, it really is an important piece for kids to gain that confidence and learn what they're doing out there. And I just think of, you know, I mean, to me, it's all about conveying Minnesota's outdoor heritage to a wide variety of people. And this program really delivers and makes it happen. And, you know, this fall, I just want to tell you a quick story. This fall, we were celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Wild and Scenic River Act on the St. Croix River with Representative Betty McCollum and people from the Park Service and all around. And we were paddling these big canoes, and sitting in front of me were two young women from Harding High School, where I went to high school and graduated 45 years ago, hard to believe. There's been a lot of changes at Harding. These two young ladies, they were both Hmong, and they were wearing, sitting there paddling, knew what to do. They were wearing North Face jackets and talking about their outdoor experiences and going to Yellowstone and all these different things they'd done, and I realized that they were part of this Harding Outdoor Club that we work with and help to support to connect these kids to the outdoors. And I would say that, you know, I mean, just sitting there listening to them and talking to them was, to me, representing what success is here as to how engaged and connected they were. So thank you again. I think on the map here you see all the places that we've been able to go to in Minnesota with this support from Legacy. Which one is the state of Minnesota? That one is the state of Minnesota map, and all those green dots are all the places where we've taken the canoes and been out on the waterways. A couple of years ago, I sat down with Representative Herdahl over here, and if you remember talking about how do we teach, you know, Minnesota history to kids and engage them, and of course he was the perfect guy to talk to about it. And I'm really thrilled that we're doing it. So that's all I got. If you have any questions, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lice. So yeah, I see from our notes here that you're the actual founder?
Yes, sir. That's correct. Chair Lilly, yes.
I do have a question about, so 15,000 kids, is that throughout the whole lifetime or since Legacy?
That's, thank you, Chair Lilly. That's through Legacy, so we've served hundreds of thousands of kids, but with Legacy support, which specifically lets us reach, you know, greater Minnesota and other areas, we've served 14,000 kids directly. And the other thing that I wanted to add, since Representative Green had asked about this previously, is we do focus a lot on youth and working with schools, but we also work with families, and we want this to be an introduction so that kids are getting outside and realizing these are public lands and waterways that they can come back with their family and experience and share for their lifetime.
Any questions for Representative Herdahl? Representative Murphy.
During the years that you've been growing and expanding your program and delivering it to different communities, have you worked with community education programs at all?
Chair Lilly and Representative
Mr.
Murphy.
Mr. Lice. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah. We have worked with community education programs in Minneapolis and St. Paul primarily. You know, earlier on, and done a lot of programming and, you know, kind of teaching with them. I don't know that we're currently doing that right away, but we have done that a lot over the history of the organization.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I just had an opportunity to be up at the History Center, and I believe one of your canoes is up there. I don't know how that came to pass, but I thought that was, I mean, if you get a chance to get up there to, as a guest, the Science Museum, just to get an idea how large one of these Voyager canoes is. It's just shocking to me how big they are. And I don't know if you have any comment about that, but it was quite a, it's kind of a neat thing.
Well, Chair Lilly, thank you for bringing that up. It's a cool thing, and it's part of an exhibit there to show people what it's like to paddle down the river. And that boat was, we own 30, we have 30 of these canoes, and they were actually made, all of them in Lower Town and St. Paul, kind of handmade cedar strip canoes. And we don't retire them too often because they're, it takes a long time to make them and they're expensive. But that one required too many repairs. So in the history, when they asked us if they could have one, we cut it in half and gave it to them. So it's pretty cool.
Well, it's really nice of you to donate it to them. But, I was impressed with them, the history people as well, kind of telling part of the Minnesota, you know, heritage and story. So.
Yeah.
Representative Green has a question. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I hope you didn't cut it in half just to be mean.
No,
no, I'm kidding. You know, you did spark a question with me, though, when you said that the families can come back and on the water. Do you have a time when you do just for families? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, Chair Lilly and Representative Green, yes, we do. We have a lot. We have a family program, and we also work to get the families connected with the kids. One of the everybody's talking about, how do you reach the next generation of outdoor people? You know, that's a very common topic. And what we found is actually to reach them, I mean, if you get the kids engaged and involved, a lot of times the parents will come out with them to be with their kids, naturally enough. So we have a series of things that we do at Fort Snelling and different places around the state. And overnight camping and, you know, different things. So we do a lot with families.
Just Representative Green.
Just one more, Mr. Chair. Thanks. How well attended is it?
Chair Lilly and Representative Green, it's very well attended. With the 14,000 kids, that's in 2 years, right? I mean, so
That's since fiscal year 2016 when we started receiving Legacy.
Yeah, so it's a lot of kids that come out, and the families, you know, they come out too. I mean, they're pretty well attended. Again, the draw is to be with their kids, I think. But, sometimes things will interrupt that, I mean, like a cold day like this, you know. But overall, I'd say it's very well attended, and the kids love it. The schools love it, so.
Representative Green, anything else? Well, thank you very much for coming forward, and I think you've really done a great job of, and it is very important to get people on the water in a state of water and getting out and enjoying our heritage. And thank you for all those years of work. It's good job back there with your guide. You'd probably be a little disappointed with us following directions as paddlers, but we learned some things today, the zip and clip and low and slow, and I got lost in that one. Low, slow, and go. What was that?
Low and slow is the way to go.
Yeah, the way to go. Okay. And then the pizza thing. So after lunch, we were probably still maybe even hungry. But thank you very much for coming. Appreciate your story.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee.
Thank you. We're going to mix up the agenda a little bit. We're going to have the, at the request of the author, we're going to have 243 first, the Litchfield Opera House. So after our meeting today, I don't know if they're going to break that down, but or if you want to, there's some pelts and some other things. Maybe you're. Okay, yeah, you can go back there and take a peek at that after the meeting, and so that's there for us to take a peek at. And they can hear, ask some more questions of the Wilderness Inquiry folks. Representative Erdahl, we... Representative Erdahl, I just to kind of get an idea where we're going to be moving bills. Maybe you want to move your own bill, but I think at this point we're just... I don't want to send you to Ways and Means yet. I don't want to get into the big rules fight, but... for possible inclusion. So if that could be your motion, I'd appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move this a possible inclusion in the legacy bill.
Thank you, sir. And go ahead and...
I should say I move House File 243 for possible inclusion. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have Representative Erdahl's bill before us, and go ahead, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. First of all, the Litchfield Opera House, which you see before you here.
Representative Erdahl, I hate to interrupt you again, but we have an amendment. Do you want to move your amendment now to get the bill in the shape that you'd like it to be?
Otherwise, the Board of Directors would be very upset with me. I would move the amendment here, page 1, line 8, to delete, to repair, and update the electrical capabilities, because that's already been done or is being done, and insert for updates to the interior and improved accessibility.
Okay. Any questions to the amendment? I would like to see us get in the shape that the author likes. Seeing none, all in favor of the author's amendment, say aye. Those opposed? The amendment's adopted, and go ahead now. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, that was a needed interruption. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Litchfield Opera House, you see on the print before you, by the way, made by a resident of Litchfield, one of my local artists. This is a historic building, the Opera House, constructed in 1900. It is on the Registry of Historic Buildings. Not long ago, 5-6 years ago, it was listed as number 3 of Minnesota's most endangered buildings. It was slated to be visited by the wrecking ball and turned into a parking lot. But a group of people dedicated to historic restoration and preservation stepped forward and took over this building. Some of the history behind it, this is where First District of the Land O'Lakes was established. In other words, Land O'Lakes, the very famous company in Minnesota today, started there. The Minnesota REA, Rural Electrification Association, one of the first REAs, was established in the Litchfield Opera House, and the first all-electric farm in the United States was authorized at a meeting in the Litchfield Opera House. And it's where I saw Santa Claus for the first time. It is now becoming a very important social and cultural venue in the city of Litchfield and the surrounding areas. It has a stage. The original stage, actually the original has been shrunken, but it's still authentic from the building structure. The outer walls have been restored, the floor refinished, the heating and cooling system is being renovated. Soon the wiring will be worked on. We have other needs, though, that still remain. Woodwork, a balcony railing, the upper balcony floor restored, the lower balcony floor improved, the lobby floor improved, staircases completed, the northeast outside door replaced, upper east room railings and lockable doors, lightning rods on the roof, basement walls sealed, and basement accessibility from the east outside for a second fire exit. So these are the things that would be done for this last $100,000. And I'll say that they are coming very close to completing this project, and this last $100,000 would do a lot toward bringing them toward that completion.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Any questions? Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erdahl, you kind of got alluded to it, but I'm just wondering, is this the first time you've asked for legacy funding for this Opera House?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Green, I think I have before. Actually, this passed last time, and it was in the legacy bill that was put together, and then the Senate didn't do one, so we couldn't do that. The outer envelope of the building has been restored using legacy funding. The floor was, yes, to answer your question, there have been several installments, and we're again now nearing completion.
Mr. Chair, that was my second question. Are you almost done?
Yeah, and you know, I will say, Mr. Chairman,
yep,
that there has been quite a bit of money raised locally as well. I mean, we're not just depending on legacy money, although it's very important to getting this done. There's been a lot of local money included in it.
Thank you, Representative Reed. It seems like we've heard about this maybe once or twice.
Soon it'll rival the ball of twine.
Ball of twine. Any other questions for Representative Erdahl? No. Would you like to any public comments on this? Mr. Heller? Mr. Heller, is it to the bill? I know we've had some trouble with some data, trying to get it in the form that you like, but is this related to the bill, sir?
Yes, it is.
Okay, Mr. Heller.
Thank you, Chair. It was an opportunity to speak at the Legacy 2019 on the 30th of January. On Bill 243, there was an amendment made today, and it talks about improving accessibility. However, if the ADA was in there, I think I'd feel better for the people I unofficially represent, the twice exceptional people with print disabilities. Obviously, that's at the discretion of the person that has the bill and of this committee. So that's basically all I have to say. Thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Heller, and thank you for bringing other issues that we're trying to work on them and try to help some of your concerns. And as we move forward, we're going to make a very good faith effort to work on many things. Representative Murphy, did you have a? I thought I saw a nothing. Thank you, Mr. Heller.
Chair?
Yes, sir.
Representative Murphy was chair the first time that I brought up the Opera House.
So, Representative Erdahl, would you like to renew your motion that House File 243 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Legacy Omnibus Bill as amended?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will renew what you just said.
Okay. So we have that before us. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. So your bill has been laid over, Mr. Chair, or former chair, I guess, or whatever you want to be called. Representative Erdahl, you have another bill before us. So how you want to proceed on that. Did you have that same Litchfield Art before another committee that I serve on? Was that before Representative Murphy's committee? Did you bring that same piece of artwork?
Yes, we did. Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Let's see. So if we can invite the people from the from Hutchinson, excuse me, but the Cog and the Wheel and Cogs Children's Museum. And so, Representative Erdahl, if you'd like to make a motion, I don't believe there's any amendments on this, to have to get the bill before us first, maybe, and then as they're setting up.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move House File 227 for possible inclusion in a legacy omnibus bill.
Thank you. So we have that that before us.
And Mr. Chairman,
Chair Erdahl,
this is the Hutchinson Children's Museum, Cog and Wheel, and has been a new and very important addition to the city of Hutchinson and to the entire area. It's in my legislative district, right across the street from Representative Grunhagen's legislative district.
Oh.
And we have the director here with us today, and so I'll turn it over to her to make the presentation.
Thank you. Go ahead and state your name for the record, and thank you for coming down today. We very much appreciate it. You have a beautiful community of Hutchinson, and I've been out there many times, and but thank you very much for coming to St. Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So my name is Jessica Sabrowski, and I am the founder of Wheel and Cog. It was opened, and I'll kind of introduce this, but I just wanted to share a little bit of background myself. We had lived in Hutchinson and then actually have relocated to Missouri, so we currently live there, but I still serve as the chair of the board and am very passionate about making sure that the museum continues. So, again, thank you for this opportunity. So, Wheeling Cog Children's Museum. So, just to share a little bit of about it, Wheeling Cog is in a rural community. Many of you know it's just down Highway 7 to the west of here, about 70 miles. And my family and I had relocated there in 2015. And when we were moving back, I grew up in Stearns County, Minnesota, in Avon, a small town. And so I knew that we were going to have some barriers and not a lot of interactive experiences for our children. And at that time, we had three. So was just passionate about it, creating a space to a safe place for our kids to play. Description of what the museum is. It's a nonprofit organization established in 2016, and the goals are to enrich the lives and the people in the community and to provide a hands-on educational experiences. And we focus a lot on STEAM experiences, and that is based around science, technology. We also focus a lot on reading and literacy, as well as engineering, art, and math. And we offer these activities for children from ages 0 to 12, because really at age 12, children start to engage in other activities, and for good reasons. I mean, that's where they should be. They start to enter middle school and high school after that. But we still try to engage them back into our museum space by coaching and leading activities. And so that's how we try to keep people engaged within the community. We pride ourselves on having interactive exhibits, and they're all homegrown. We have not had anything fabricated from outside for the most part. We have purchased some pieces from other organizations, but if you ever visit us, we welcome you to do so. We just pride ourselves on having things like vegetables that we hand sew, and I might pass these around if that's okay.
Yep. Is that from Representative Erdahl's garden?
Yes. No. No. The thing about the veggies and the fruits, a lot like Mankato, we use that platform of creating products that actually mimic what we have. So we have watermelon, and they have sand in them. And so when a 2-year-old goes over to the garden and hand picks a watermelon, they kind of have to go, "Oh, wow! You know, that's heavy." And so you know, they get that real feel of what it's like, and then they get to connect the dots between where our food is coming from and where it's going, because we have the farmers market, and then we've got a deli area for the children to go to and prepare the foods for their family too. And I've got some of those pictures further on here. But as our name alludes, we like to engage with the community. We have some large manufacturing organizations within the community that we've been really partnering with, and I'll talk about that further on too. Our mission is to strengthen and inspire local communities to support basic education and literacy. And another big thing that we focus a lot on is the economic and community development, because, as you know, in many rural small towns, it's easy for youth to disengage and to make choices that aren't always positive. And there's also fewer opportunities to really do things that are positive. And so we just really focus a lot on inspiring and educating through play and really trying to reach whole families. So we talked about this earlier in another presentation, but the importance of play is great. And we really pride our Chamber of Commerce hashtags, love where you live, and much and hutch, because you really do have to love where you live. So make it great. The pictures in the slideshow here are of our current exhibit spaces, and you can tell they're homegrown. We actually buy our products at Menards and bring it in and build. I actually personally installed the clinic myself, because my background is a nurse practitioner, and I pride making sure that people understand you know, what health means, and that we can reach people even if they're not in the clinic to make to kind of groom them, if you will, for the future. They can make choices to become nurses or doctors or even vet techs if they want. The statistics that I like to focus on are that a third of kids are either overweight or obese, and you know, literacy plays into that, family engagement plays into that, and so I really like to focus on ways that we can get kids moving, and so we focus a lot in the museum on gross motor play. And so with some of the legacy funding that we've had, we've included a climbing wall. We've got a backyard explorers area, which is awesome, but it could be better. I really want to include some more conservation and other pieces, so we'll get to that too. And about 80% of health conditions are actually preventable. And so what we try to do is partner with Hutchinson Health in our community. And actually we've had occupational therapists come out. And we've also had teddy bear clinics where the pediatric or the pediatricians have come into the space. And the children bring in their teddy bear, stuffed animal, and it gets a checkup. And we walk through that whole clinic process. And so it's really engaging. And those days are free play days. So anybody, it's accessible for all in the community. And we've had great turnouts. We've had up to 300 people come through on those days particularly. So really exciting. Touching base on what the need is, so we're a manufacturing hub, and many of the people who end up living in Hutchinson may choose to want to live somewhere else, but and it's because there may not be as many as amenities available. And so I pride the fact that we have this children's museum, and I consider it an amenity. It's a learning-based amenity. And I'm hopeful that more people who work in Hutchinson will choose to live in Hutchinson or the surrounding areas, because we have this children's museum, this opportunity where the parents can bring their children in and engage with them. Because I don't know, I'm guessing many of us are parents or grandparents, and we don't get to observe our children very often. And so to be able to have them come in and interact with them and observe them, like we talked about before, let's do it again, Mom, or can we get together and build, you know, we've got these big blue blocks, and just to see the passion that comes alive when a dad and a child get to, you know, build blocks, it's really cool. We've had a lot of field trips. We've also have had a lot of daycares established, and our daycares get a special rate and sometimes can bring their children for free if they're all members to the museum. And so we've had, we've also prided having very low rates. We charge $4 for a child or a person to attend the museum, which I believe is a very accessible rate. I think for that reason our margins are very low still as far as like what we're bringing in for revenue. But we also have individuals who can receive a scholarship also. And I think for those reasons we've been very excited to see our numbers climb significantly. And I'll get some slides later on that I'll show you. The average age of an individual who plays in the museum is about 3.4 years. And so a lot of our spaces are geared towards that population, but we're really trying to reach that 9 to 12 age group, because we've found that oftentimes children who are younger have siblings who are older who tag along, and they think they're bored, but what happens is the older children start instructing and guiding play, and it's a really a moving experience to see that happen too. So, but we do want to have opportunities, and that's kind of what we're looking for, is to offer more opportunities for that 9 to 12 age range to keep those kids busy and find ways to get them more involved. So we have 19 schools in the area. We have 42 licensed daycares, and it used to be 27 the last time I gave this presentation, so a significant growth in children is what I see with that number. And then we have 4 libraries in the McLeod region. We know the benefits of play, but here they are for us. I think the thing that I think that I like to focus on is that language and literacy development, and I think we developed a new program. They're called Literacy Totes through United Way funding, which we utilized and leveraged funding for this program, but it was based out of a library program that's provided in Columbia, Missouri, where we live now. And a PhD student developed these literacy totes, and it's basically a program where the members can check out the tote and take it home, and the tote has board books, it has puppets, and it has instructions if a parent needs some guidance on what to do with it. But I have taken these home with my children, and my 9-year-old will sit down with my 2-year-old and she'll go through the kit with them, and it's really also very exciting. So I'm hopeful that the community will really embrace that opportunity to exercise that function, and that we can maybe grow that program as well. So the passion for play, I am from Avon, Minnesota, and grew up in a family of seven, and just really embrace the hometown, homegrown feel, and know that if you expose children to other individuals, that you can really grow them through experiences. And so that's where my passion stems from. I think we carry it through the museum. I love the milk jug igloo we did last year. You can see it pictured here. We had created an ice fishing exhibit in our backyard explorers area. And it means productivity. It means growing our own. And play is a language that all can easily engage in. So you guys did well before. I enjoyed that. So passion for play, we're an underserved area. We have a total population of about 3,500 within McLeod County, and not specifically Hutchinson. I think we just have 15,000 there. But the statistics you can see here on this square, the reported area, we have young families are growing in numbers, and age 65 and older is at 16.47%. But what we really want to do is take those, engage those elderly, and have them help us grow our own. So as people are looking at aging out or retiring, we try to tap into them and say, hey, what was your passion, and how can we tie you back in the museum? We've had several people who are woodworkers, hands-on architects who came in and helped us with our tapescape. We have, you know, we just really try to tie back in and help people live longer and healthier lives. So this is our road traveled. I like to highlight that we are very new and fresh. We just started in 2016. We have grown huge numbers. So in 2016, we only had 3,500 guests. In 2017, we had 12,012 guests. And in this year, we had 17,336 guests as of the 14th, but we ended up ending the year at just over 18,400 and some. Our goal was 20,000, but those are incredible numbers, and I think it says a lot for what the museum's offering the community, just seeing that growth. We have a lot of individuals in the community who are part of our organization and pride, either through donation, through grants, or through donating their time and energy towards things that we do. We have some exhibit examples, and I've provided this in the PowerPoint as well, but we start by everybody who comes into the museum goes through our hand hygiene clinic. They all have to wash their hands and take off their shoes, and then they're able to go in and play. And we have the glow germ there, and if you've never experienced that, you put a little cream on your hands, you wash your hands, and then you put it under a black light, and if that cream is still on your hands and it glows, you have not effectively washed your hands, and so we ask them to go back and do it again. So over time, it becomes a game, but it is one of those things that it's important, a life skill to teach everybody to make sure that you're washing your hands effectively. And then we've got our farmer's market deli. We've got our snow scene in the center there with the milk jug igloo. And then we just updated our theater stage and relocated that too. And we're going to expand that. But you can see it's kind of got I'm proud of what we have. With legacy funding, we were able to get this 800-pound fire truck. And we actually were able to get it. It was a demo through a company. And we leverage funding for that locally, and so we've actually leveraged $40,000 of the $80,000 we received in legacy funding, and so I think that speaks volumes. Really proud of our community for embracing and helping us be successful. We also have the farmers market deli area, which is amazing. You can see the homegrown veggies there. We've got infant play areas, specifically targeting the sensory tables, and we have a curriculum that our staff actually use. And if you follow us on Facebook, you'll see those about weekly updated, and it's pretty fun. We've got the interactive exhibits, including the climbing wall, tapescape, and we've got a tower. So we really do focus on big body play, and we're actually going to be redoing our tapescape here with the tapescape artist Eric Leonardson out of Mankato, and that's coming up on February 17th. So we're super excited about doing that again. We also have the STEAM activities. We've offered scholarships, and we've also offered specifically in Hutchinson, we've been growing. We offer a free little library, low-income families, scholarships. We're a field trip destination, and we've worked closely with many school districts getting them out. We offer to Glencoe Silver Lake, the third graders. We offer a field trip program for specifically on forces in motion. And so they've actually come back 2 years in a row now, and we're hoping to grow that opportunity for other schools. It's available. Actually, we're booked out in February. Every day of the month we are booked with either field trips or birthday parties, or we're open. So I'm just really excited about that. Touched on the unique capacity. So I think didn't really talk a lot about socioeconomics, but I like that the museum allows many people from very deaf backgrounds to engage and meet each other in the museum space. And, you know, you might have a new moms of different socioeconomic statuses who are able to come in and, you know, nurse together or talk about what their problems at home might be, and, you know, allow them to connect. And they may not be friends outside the museum, but it's an opportunity to engage and to coach, and everybody needs that. So I like that the museum offers that as well. The funding that we've received really reaches the youngest members, residents in the area. And so, you know, from them through me to you, we say thanks, because we wouldn't be here without the support. We work with local artists and craftsmen, specifically on the tapescape. All of our exhibits are built within our space, and we like to focus on culture and history. Our stats and sustainability, the first year and a half, we were volunteer-driven, only open 3 days a week, and now we're open 5 to 6, and we're hoping to be open 7 days a week here shortly. We offer time studies, and we've been demonstrating that children are playing about 2.5 to 3 hours in our only, it's about 7,000 square foot space in the mall. And so we're hoping to be able to grow this next year into another space to give them more room, more exhibits, because we're showing just this huge need in the community. We've now had over 31,000 guests come through, and we talked about what our population is in that area. It's almost matching our population. So I think we're drawing quite a crowd. We are proud of developing community partners and for contributions, and most museums rely about 50% or more on grants and local funding. And so I think we've been showing that we can do a lot with the funding that we have received. So what we're asking for this next year is a total of $170,000. We wanted to allocate $50,000 for program development, $30,000 for developing community programs outreach, including potentially a trailer, and then $50,000 for exhibit build outs so that they can be more. Kids are rough, and if any of you have had toys at home, you know this, but we need to have more durable products, and we also like to have more cohesive signage and do a little bit more marketing, because, for example, Watertown Mayor doesn't know that we exist. We found out last week, and they're in our school districts, and so we like to be able to reach out to them, and we learned that they went to a Forces in Motion field trip in St. Paul, and not to take away, you know, from where they're going or what they're doing, but it would make more sense in proximity for them to save on gas and come to our location. So to recap, there's no offerings for indoor, interactive, or imaginative play within 50-mile radius. The museum is designed to offer youth in the community opportunities to engage and play. And the concept of the museum will continue to enhance the vibrancy of the area and hopefully attract and retain individuals. I really like that we can engage with, for example, 3M. We had an O2 Engage program that we just went through from October to January with them, and it was a pro bono program where they came out and helped us implement a membership tracking system in our organization. It saved us we allocated about 14,000 of our legacy budget for that, and we spent 5. So for us, that means a lot, just to be able to engage with those partners. So again, we're asking 170,000. We received 80,000 last go round, and we leveraged 40,000 of from our community. So just want to throw that out there. Any questions?
Well, thank you very much. Did a great job, and thank you for presenting it. You got a nice story to tell, and I have a question for Representative Murphy. We're getting to the.
I don't have a question.
Oh. Mr. Representative Murphy.
I don't have a question. I just have a request. I would like you to provide the committee with the costs of memberships, the amount of donations that you have received in a fiscal year or a regular year, and since the last appropriation that you've received, and how many fundraisers you've had, and how much each has made, and give us an example of the various scholarships that you've awarded.
So you got the questions there, and
so I'm going to do the best, Mr. Chairman, Lily, and
Representative Murphy.
Representative Murphy, thank you for the question. So I did provide a profit loss. Statement to Miss Margaret, and so those will be available. But we have held, I want to say, between 4 and 5 actual fundraising events. So it's not been huge in the last 4 years. What we struggle with is that everything is geared to, so the fundraising opportunities have been geared towards children. For example, last May we held what's called the Royal Ball. We ourselves spent about $3,000 on that particular event, and we only netted about $1,700. So we're finding that it's not, our time is not best spent with activities like that. We would like to figure out new opportunities to engage with the community for fundraising. What does work well for us for fundraising, and we have our gross gain or the amount that we leveraged in the community over the last year was about 40,000. It was just shy of 40,000. And that's all of our fundraising. And that goes towards that. So basically what we do is we look at an opportunity, so a grant. We had a need for a climbing wall. So what we did was we were planning to use legacy funding for that. But when we had an opportunity in the community to come up, Hutchinson Health had a grant opportunity. We actually wrote the grant to them, and we were able to get the funding completely covered from that grant. So we didn't have to allocate our legacy funding to cover that. We used it for something else. So that 40,000 is roughly where we were at with how much we've gained. We, like I said, we've only had a handful of opportunities.
Thank you very much, Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I would just like to be able to see all the ways that you, in writing, the amount of money that you've had to spend, in addition to what the legacy funding is. Perfect. And
thank you. So please try to get the request, and then
yeah,
and then send that to the members, or we'll send it to our staff, and we'll pass that out to Representative Murphy.
Do you do a mail out with an envelope saying, please contribute at the end of the year kind of thing, and get returns on that? I want to know how many returns. And
Ms. Sabrowski, please present that to us, or to send it in, and we'll send that out to the members.
Will do.
Anybody else have any other questions? Representative Erdahl, would you like to renew your motion that House File 227 be laid over for possible inclusion in the legacy omnibus bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I will renew that motion.
All those in favor of this, the Chair or Representative Erdahl's motion, say aye.
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 Aye. Those opposed? So you're laid over for possible inclusion. I just want to throw out... we're a little bit over time again, but next Wednesday, please try to add to your schedule, and you probably have got it in your emails, is over at the History Center. They're doing a celebration of a 10-year legacy gathering, and so all areas of the fund, the outdoor heritage, clean water, parks and trails, arts and cultural heritage, will be doing presentations. And it's from 5:30 to about 8 o'clock over at the History Center. So with that, any other business? Seeing none, with that, we're adjourned.